Welcome to Business for Real. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, it's a podcast about real businesses. We talk to real people and about the realities of starting and running a business. It's their journey of how they got started, took their first steps to independence, and real strategies that have gotten them where they're at today. I'm Ryan Fritz, and today I'm talking with Billy Giordano. He opened a Room 38 restaurant and lounge in 2008, which is now in its 10th year of business. Opened another concept in 2011, a Froyo shop that sold it in 2016. Started acquiring rental property in 2013. Founded a startup in 2015 and launched it in 2017. It's called Staffed Up. We'll talk more about that later, too. Billy, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
So in the summary you sent me, you say, I dove into entrepreneurship about 10 years ago and never looked back. I want to talk about kind of right before diving in, while you were standing on the, well, we'll stick with the analogy, when you were standing on the diving board, what were you thinking? What was going through your mind?
To be honest, I was pretty fresh out of college, pretty dedicated in just about everything I did, but never really had a full direction. I actually took a pretty sharp turn into entrepreneurship from where I had originally planned on going. Graduated from Colorado State with health and exercise science degree, wanted to be a strength and conditioning coach for professional athletes. So came to Columbia to work with Mizzou football, spent about 6 months in the program. I was going to go to graduate school, but got distracted by an offer to run a restaurant. I was working part-time as a door guy at a bar in town, worked really hard and kind of got noticed. And they offered me an opportunity to become a general manager for a brand new restaurant at 22 years old. So figured that was a good opportunity to learn how to open a business, run a business. I'd always kind of been pretty self-motivated. So I took it, kind of skipped the graduate school situation, managed that business for a couple of years myself before I kind of decided I'm pretty good at this. Maybe I'll just do it on my own.
So you get an offer, you're kind of just doing, getting a little work, a little money in the meantime while you're, you know, doing what you considered your gig, right? The kind of sports stuff and kind of getting ready for grad school. How quickly did you make that decision? I mean, it was, like you said, it's a sharp turn.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was pretty quick. So right after my internship, I got my degree. Usually interns that work in the program will go on to grad school. I was actually the first, and I kind of felt bad about it, but the first person to turn down the coach that offered me the GA position in the weight room. He offered me the position. He was excited for me to be a part of the team, and I had to respectfully decline just because I felt like while I loved what I was doing, I was still not necessarily as driven about it as I wanted to be. I love the concept. I love the education, and personally, it's, you know, something that's still a part of my life, but I just thought my goals were a little bit different and my aspirations were higher. So I basically just kind of went head first into this management opportunity. I had worked really hard for these people and kind of really embraced the culture of the restaurant business and hospitality and customer service. Just kind of went straight at it and really, I mean, we can talk about how I took the turn into deciding to do my own thing, but, this was just kind of like my grad school. I took a professional opportunity to learn in real life and, made the most of it.
Yeah. And that's, so you get the general manager gig, you're doing that. And then what's the next, like, when is it like, I need to be doing this for myself. I need to really take this one step further.
Yeah. I think I always had ideas. I always had, you know, inspirations and things I was doing. And I recognized that, you know, I was good at what I was doing. I had built a really great, clientele, established this, you know, 7,000 square foot restaurant, into being a prominent establishment in our city. So I was feeling good about it, but, you know, I'm not really making a ton of money, not really having any savings, didn't really consider any opportunities to pull the trigger on something. But one of my regulars, who actually owned quite a few businesses, quite a bunch of real estate in Columbia, just approached me one day. He you know, kind of a good old boy, grew up farming, built hotels and made really good money. Well-respected guy that I had taken care of for quite a bit, just walked right up to me while I was taking care of him and his wife one day and said, "Hey, you seem like the kind of kid that might have a good idea. I just had one of my spaces come open. Would you like to check it out?" And, you know, I thought about it for about 0.2 seconds. And, right. Absolutely. You know, well, why not? A buddy of mine and I had always talked about opening a gym together, and that was still kind of in my forethought. So I was really walking through this space with the intention of potentially creating a training facility downtown Columbia. But when I walked through, it was already set up as a restaurant. The bones were there, the kitchen, the hood, the walk-ins. There was too much equity just in the space itself for me to say, I'm going to rip all this out and start from scratch. So, you know, I probably spent an hour walking through, you know, kind of getting chills based on, you know, the excitement and the idea of it. I didn't sleep for about a full month tossing around thinking about it. And then I just said, fuck it, to be honest. I started writing a business plan. It took me about 2 weeks. I went to 3 different banks. Everyone told me no. You know, I'm at this point 23 years old with no prior entrepreneurship experience. It's 2008, so we're like right in the peak of the downturn of the economy. You know, restaurants are very fickle, very risky investment for most people. Banks just weren't interested. They loved my concept. They, you know, commended me on my business plan and how elaborate and pointed everything was, but just said, you know, it's not something that we can get our board behind. So I took that for what it was, went out and talked to people who believed in me as an individual, as opposed to my business plan, and got personal investment, found a couple of partners that also brought investment in. I went and I quit my job, worked for 4 months to basically flip this entire place. I mean, I was there 7 days a week, 12, sometimes 18 hours a day. Did it with our bare hands and opened it up in August of 2018. So I think I quit my job in April, bartended some shifts for about a month, just to kind of keep the cash flow. And then I just put my head down and worked as fast as possible to get it open for football season.
So, yeah, I mean, there's so many great features of that story, but I like that. I mean, you were hard work got you the opportunity in the first place. It got this guy to recognize that, hey, this guy, let's maybe give him a shot. But it wasn't like he handed you everything on a silver platter either. You know, you had to still do the work to it. The banks, you know, that has to be a little disheartening, I think, right after spending 2 weeks, as you said, kind of putting together this great plan. And then even if people are kind of enthusiastic about it, obviously the money wasn't behind it, right?
Yeah.
So this kind of personal investment, I mean, so for other people that, you know, can't get the money from the banks and things like that, like what are the actual steps to getting kind of people fund? I mean, certainly, I don't know if it's just people giving you cash and that's it, or is it a more formal structure? Like there's some type of private funding and investment and like actual payback of that type of loans type of thing?
The way this one went, I'm working through raising a round for my startup right now, which is much more elaborate than what we did for the restaurant. The restaurant was simply me going to an individual that I knew was financially intuitive and really well-based. They had made some money, and I knew that they were smart about how they operated and what they did in their lives. And they were close enough to me that, you know, they respected me as an individual, a hardworking person. And I just basically told them, you know, here's my business plan. But when it came down to it, he looked me in the face and said, "Listen, I'm not investing in your business. This is a loan to Billy Giordano. If the business goes upside down, Billy Giordano pays the money back." So we did an amortization scale standard. I think it was 5 year. You know, he gave me a 6 month grace period to get open. We started making our payments back, ended up paying him back in 3 years, which was nice. And you know, I, you know, sent him his last check and a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue as a thank you for believing in me and, just, you know, giving us the opportunity, because you know, it wasn't just me. My chef is my business partner. He did the same thing. He went to family, and they gave him they matched the investment. And then we actually had a contractor that we had worked with in town, and we told him, hey, you know, we'd like to get this thing off the ground for as low, you know, as low financial equity as possible. We're willing to do as much as we can ourselves, but obviously we need some, you know, professional contracting assistance. Would you be willing to, for equity in the business, basically kind of work for free aside from the materials that were necessary? So, three of us went in together. Before we paid off all of our loans, we bought the contractor out. So it's just the two of us now. But I mean, really it was not being afraid to ask for help is kind of the only thing that I can accredit it to. And I think that I actually got yelled at by the person who gave me the money because he was like, why didn't you come to me first?
So I think that the answer is pretty obvious, but how important is kind of family and this community in starting any type of business like that, and critical, you know, how is critical is it to your success in the long run, do you think?
I think it's important as a foundation. I mean, without a doubt, you can have an incredible idea, and unless you just get some wild luck, family, community, the people around you that believe in you and that are willing to help share your story and your process and really help you sell your product is important. I mean, and we all know social media pretty much runs the world today. And I mean, that's something that, you know, as you hit these milestones, you know, people want to celebrate you. So we've been really good about thanking our customers. And every year that we, you know, we get into a new year, we have an anniversary party, and it's not really to boast like, oh, look at us, we're awesome, we're doing great. It's more of a, you know, we appreciate you guys. Thank you so much for being our loyal customers, our patrons. Couldn't do this without you. You know, it's basically a friends and family party, and, you know, and we party, you know, we celebrate. It's a lot of fun, and what we do is fun, and we really enjoy it. So it's just something that we continually try to stay connected with the people that got us to where we are now.
I like that. I think that, you know, obviously there's a lot of hard work, and maybe not all of it's fun, but you really do, I think, have to celebrate all of the wins. And I think just that yearly anniversary party, and are there other ways that you kind of take these little goals, these big milestones, and kind of really make a big deal out of them to, like I said, just to celebrate, but to like reward the people that have been a part of it?
Yeah. I mean, internally we do a lot for our staff. I mean, we give a lot back to people who are, you know, they're the front men of our establishment, they represent us. They do everything. They keep us going. So, I mean, really we invest back in our staff quite a bit, and then in our community. So as far as the community goes, we really don't advertise much anymore besides social media. Philanthropy is really our form of marketing and giving back and staying tied to the community in as many ways as possible. So, I mean, aside from how we celebrate one time a year, we also just try to do as much as we can to be a part of the community and really, you know, be a staple establishment, not just in food and beverage, but just as someone who is participating actively in everything that, you know, Columbia really is.
Awesome. And so the Room 38, kind of that was your kind of first stab into, you know, getting going. And then there was some other opportunities that came up along the way, right? In 2011.
Yep.
What's that all about?
So 2008, our first 6 months, we are just killing it, making so much money. We're so excited. We're like, we're going to pay this off in no time. We didn't understand what a honeymoon period was. So that hit us like a ton of bricks. Really had to learn how to scale back a little bit and get through, of course, that economic downturn. But once we figured it out and really hit our like genuine stride, we were like, you know what? We've got this pinpointed. It's time to maybe take some new steps in another direction. The frozen yogurt business was super hot in 2011. You know, maybe we were just a little bit behind the curve, but one way or another, we decided Froyo was an opportunity to expand with lower overhead, you know, a little bit upfront, quite a bit more upfront actually. But the day to day was, you know, low cost of goods, low overhead altogether with a high profit margin. And we wanted to build one have a territory we could expand, regionally and get into about three within a couple of years. Our goal was to, have a small Froyo empire. We built this in Rolla, which is about an hour and 20 minutes from Colombia. And that's where my business partner's from. The location seemed incredible. The rent and the opportunity to start from scratch was really good. We really built a great business plan, but we didn't necessarily take into account the regional effect, the type of customer, and really the university down there is predominantly male. So I don't know if you're familiar with frozen yogurt, but it attracts, it drives, it markets towards the female population. We had a good year, but we were so far away, we kind of started, originally with 2 days there each. I would be there Monday, Tuesday. He would be there Wednesday, Thursday. And we had a really good grasp on it. But then we slowly started scaling back because it was kind of running itself and we felt like it was fine. Progressively, we saw theft and our customer base kind of going away. And to be honest with you, while we were excited about the financial opportunities and, the potential for some real profit, there was just no passion behind it. Room 38, when we struggled, I just dug in deeper. When finances were tight, I made sure that I had my finger on the pulse of every single expense and I knew exactly what was going on and I made changes and I worked more and harder and did whatever it took. When the Froyo started failing, I poked at it a little bit. But I just didn't care and I had no passion for it. And eventually we ended up losing a ton of money. It was the biggest financial learning experience I have ever had, without a doubt, and will definitely go with me for a very long time. When we sold in 2016, we got out of it for pennies compared to what we paid for it. And the freedom and the weight off my shoulders was worth the money I'm still actually paying to, cover our SBA debts on that.
So, yeah, and it seemed like there must have been a book circulating around that time that was like, make lots of money quick with frozen yogurt, right?
Yeah, it was, there was definitely, it was the hot drug for sure.
And you say, you just, like I said, weren't really as into it after all was said and done. And, but what kind of, when you decided to take that step, do you think it was just, I've started this restaurant and it's been successful, now I can kind of go kind of do anything and make it successful? Or what drew you to it originally and kind of?
Entrepreneurship, I feel like once you kind of get a taste, once you get your first success, I guess what happened was we paid off our debt and we were like, well, now what?
What's next?
Yeah. This is making money. This is doing well. We've got good staff. It's time to let's not be complacent. And I'm just not a complacent individual. I'm always trying to do more. And I wish I did less, but, really the idea was it was an opportunity that we saw, this was really hard to get off the ground. The restaurant's got a ton of overhead. It needs our attention 24/7. Let's create an opportunity to make more money with less work. And that was kind of the idea. Now, it wasn't supposed to be, set it and forget it by any means, but, pretty close to it. It's frozen yogurt. How hard could it be?
Right. Yeah. Well, and it was a different problem to solve, right? So it was a different type of experience for you to get your hands into and be successful in, I think. To be honest, I'm inspired and kind of relieved that you've done so much in kind of really just a short amount of time. It makes me think about the Orange County Jack Black's character when he says, "I've got these ideas just burning in my skull."
Yeah, exactly.
You've done a lot of stuff, and it feels like even within these first two opportunities, you were pulled in all these different directions. What do you do to stay focused and kind of keep it all straight in your head and make sure you're doing the things that you need to be doing for each of the businesses and each of the different things that you've got going on?
It's really easy to get pulled in a ton of directions and try to do everything all at the same time. And I've not always been great at one, delegating, two, managing my calendar in a way that makes me efficient. So I think that, in the beginning, no matter what popped up in front of me, I was like a squirrel. I'm gonna get that, and then I'm gonna get that, and I'm gonna do that, and I'm gonna do that. And sometimes I would do like a tenth of 10 projects and look at the day and be like, I got nothing done. So realistically, I had to take a step back and understand that I needed to really dedicate and focus my time specifically to each business in their own respective blocks, allocate my time appropriately, you know, focus on priorities and not let, you know, menial tasks get the best of me, because, you know, we all see something that is an easy win. And it's like, okay, well, I'm going to do that before I do this big project. And then there's another easy win. Well, I'll do that before I do this big project. Before you know it, it's 3 weeks and you haven't touched the project that really means the most to you and has the biggest benefit on your success. So it's taking a step back, taking a deep breath, analyze what's important to you, no matter the size of the project or what else is going on, and just trying to stay focused in a very busy and distracting world.
Yeah. And I think, well, you know, part of being an entrepreneur and a successful one is being able to have that future vision and that insight and trying out new things. But, you know, you also have to avoid that kind of bright and shiny new syndrome where you're just going after the next best thing. And it sounds like, you know, you're kind of, you feel like you're getting better at that, right? Is there things that you've done to really kind of say, no, that's a great idea, but I have to not do that right now? Like, have you learned how to say no better?
Absolutely. Because I mean, even in the restaurant, I mean, we said yes to everything, every opportunity, because we were like, you know what? It's an opportunity regardless of the size. Let's do it. As we get better at what we're doing, you know, we've got the experience and the credibility and really just kind of, yeah, you have to learn from your own mistakes, and you have to learn from the time invested. There are things you can take from other people's experiences, but I mean, I have habitually in life only learned the best lessons the hard way, and it might be a fault in my character, but one way or another, it's just the path we choose isn't always the right one, but as long as we are learning lessons from the mistakes we make, I feel like, you know, nothing is lost. It's not a waste of our time. It might be a small hurdle or setback, but just learning from mistakes, I feel like, has been the most valuable. And learning from experience to be able to make the right decisions, choose the right things that work best for us, and just, you know, having that insight that you wouldn't have unless you went through it yourself.
And what do you think is some of those hard lessons learned? Obviously, you've started several different things, so you've actually been on that diving board a couple times now, and each time you've had a little bit more insight into what's needed to get everything going. But what do you feel like, especially that first time, what would have been the most important information for you to have at that point that you wish you had, that, you know, you maybe learned 5 years later, like, oh, I wish I knew that when I started?
Yeah. I honestly, it's really evaluating the decisions you make based on research and understanding, you know, who you're talking to, the credibility and the relationships that they've got with other people. I mean, looking back at the decisions we've made on like Groupon and restaurant.com and like coupon customers and really just things about the restaurant itself, there's got to be a couple $100,000 that I could be just, you know, rolling around in right now. I'd rather be staring at it and burning it than have given it away the way that I did it. You know, there's decisions I've made hastily based on being busy and saying, you know what, sounds like a good idea, let's pull the trigger, only in hindsight to realize that, you know, had I just done my due diligence and really asked the right questions, you know, asked for help and advice, I probably would not have made that decision and had been better off from it. So same thing with the Froyo. I mean, we had the business model was good. We put a ton of time and energy. We built a beautiful store. The product was incredible. But we just didn't understand the customer in the area. You know, we didn't understand what it would take, the price point that would facilitate profit there. You know, that's another thing is like, you and I kind of spoke earlier before this podcast about the perception of quality without sacrificing, you know, saving money to, you know, create a good product without sacrificing the perception of quality. We could have made steps in the Froyo to do that, but just never really took the time to pull the trigger. We were just a higher price point than our customer was willing to pay consistently, and it didn't work out. So,
how much research do you think is too much, you know, and how much is it a gut decision? Because there's always a balance between, you know, you only have as much information as you have at any given point, and you can certainly dig deeper and keep going, but that's kind of a rabbit hole in itself, you know, but you don't want to just shoot from the hip all the time either. How have you kind of balanced those two aspects as you, you know, start new businesses, as you make decisions within the businesses that you have?
Yeah, I mean, I think you look back at your experiences, you know, you take educated guesses. It's never a flip of a coin. You can't always be certain, and you're never going to know exactly. But if you have confidence in yourself and your abilities, and you're willing to do the work, then there's not a whole lot of room for failure. I mean, it's really, if you're passionate about the project, you know what you're doing, and you've got resources to get it done, then it's time to pull the trigger and jump in. If you're sitting there and you've had, you know, a couple of shots of tequila and a couple of beers with your buddy, and, you know, you guys came up with this great idea, and now it's time to go start your first business, maybe sleep on it a little bit.
But that's where all great business ideas come from, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I wish that I remembered all the great business ideas and half cocked. I mean, to be honest with you, I bet I've passed on some that I probably should have pulled the trigger on. But yeah, I mean, it's just something that I really think, if you want to be an entrepreneur and you want to pull the trigger on stuff, it's not just I'm inspired, I'm ready to go. Make sure you kind of take a step back. Like I told you on the first one, I didn't sleep for a month. I did my research. I asked questions. I talked to people. I created at least the bones for the concept, and really kind of like had that internal turmoil of, is this the right decision? And use all the assets I had available to make the best educated guess I could. And, you know, we didn't nail it. We weren't, you know, an overnight success by any means, but we had the right idea from the get-go. We were dedicated to it, passionate about it, and we worked really hard to achieve our goals. And that's really the full story.
When you talk about kind of, especially, so the business plan, you know, is the most formal laid out goal setting and practical planning, I think that, you know, you can do towards a business. What types, you know, the business plan, but even as you start expanding and keep growing, you know, the restaurant, what do you do in order to set goals for the year or set goals for the month, or, you know, what's the strategy for that?
Yeah. I mean, as a first-time business owner, you don't really know what real attainable goals are. You know, you can make projections, but you don't have the experience and the track record to understand what worked, what didn't, how you can improve. So our first year, I mean, it was, you know, keep our costs low, work as much as possible, just keep on going and let's see what happens. That was really it. So we just worked and worked and worked. And once we realized that, hey, we've built, you know, a company that is profitable. You know, we spent 40 grand this month and made 60. That's great. You know, that's something that's a good sign. So really we just kind of benchmarked month after month, you know, okay, this month is, you know, we didn't expect to have a bad summer because we weren't catering to the college demographic, but you know, summers are slower. We realized that, you know, going into it, we probably should have stockpiled a little bit more cash instead of paying our loans off faster. Lessons learned. And so year after year after year, and I tell you what, man, I looked at my business partner, I bet 2 weeks ago, and said, hey, 20 years, we are going to be so good at this, because it's every day. We learn a new lesson every single day. We learn how to do something better, whether it's, you know, the organization of our kitchen to, you know, how we, you know, or orchestrate and time our finances. It's an everyday, you know, I wouldn't say uphill battle by any means, but it's just something that, you know, if you're complacent, you're not learning lessons, then, you know, you probably will not enjoy what you're doing and be successful. But, you know, setting goals to continually improve year after year is really all we strive for. You know, we look at our numbers and say, this number, our liquor expenses were lower this year, but our liquor profits were higher. That was a good idea. You know, our food profits are through the roof. Our catering you know, we invested in catering about 5 years ago when it was, you know, something we did every couple of weeks. Now we're doing it 5, 6, almost 7 days a week. You know, it's just things where you really find attainable opportunities. You look at what you're doing and room for improvement. And then you just kind of put a little carrot out in front of you and see if you can get to it. And keep on going. I mean, that's not exactly the most structured advice, but I mean, it's what works for that.
Well, I think it's interesting too, because I mean, it seems like, especially in that first year, like, you know, probably, you know, if you've read any of these different business books, right, it does talk about like this, you need to have these big hairy goals, right? And you need to do this and that, and you need to have all of this kind of laid out. And it seems a little overwhelming, but it sounds like, you know, especially in that first year, like, hey, maybe it's just like really just do everything as good as possible and, you know, make sure you're making a profit, but don't worry about the fact that you're not setting these quote unquote goals, right?
Yeah. And it was definitely unconventional. I mean, we didn't really know what we were doing aside from what we were doing. You know, we were good at, you know, providing the service and the atmosphere and all of it, but running the business, I mean, it was kind of a stab in the dark. We did our best research and learned as much as we could before we did it, but then we just jumped in and really for us, it was just being there and paying attention and making sure that we knew what was going on and not getting blindsided by, you know, expenses that we weren't, you know, paying attention to or expecting.
And as far as kind of, so you're paying attention to things that are going on, you see an opportunity to maybe expand or save some costs. How quickly or how cautiously do you make these changes in the business? You don't want to disrupt kind of the good thing you have going on, but you do want to act on things that could make an impact.
I think if you've had the time to pay attention and understand the trends, what's working and what's not, you pull the trigger immediately. I mean, for us, it's if I have a good idea, I walk in, I have a conversation with the right people in my company to say, hey, this is what I'm seeing. Do you agree? Would this make sense? Yes, let's do it. I mean, I don't know. Proactive is definitely my method.
Do a quick test, and if it takes off, go with it. If it doesn't, then
yeah,
you've already figured out it doesn't work.
Exactly, and we put things in a place that didn't take off. You know, I mean, there's been menu items, there's been concepts, there's been things that we've done, even marketing and promotions that we've tried. And you know what? We give it a run. If it's not it, no sweat. Lessons learned. Go back to the drawing board.
Great. It's these incremental improvements, it seems like, that really kind of have set the pace for your business. Like I said, find out what works, kind of keep improving. That to me kind of harkens to the software world, which I know you're diving into now. As you kind of dig deeper into that, and I want to talk more about that, but as you're kind of experiencing that world, are you bringing back some of these different concepts to kind of brick and mortar and service industry, or
as far as taking what I'm learning in the tech business back to the restaurant,
and or vice versa, I guess, you know, like these are well, let's start talking about Staffed Up is the kind of the software endeavor, right? Let's talk about that a little bit, how that started, what got you into it.
Sure. I mean long story short is in the restaurant business, there's a lot of turnover. It's hard to keep great staff. Sometimes you're so busy, you settle for the top of an applicant stack. You know, you go through the first three, you call them, you take the best of what's in front of you. I just figured there had to be a better way to hire and a better way to keep a more qualified staff and save time and energy doing it. So, you know, there are HR tools that exist in the world, but they don't really market towards or accommodate the type of person or the type of employer that I am. So really this was an opportunity to fill a gap that I saw in the market and offer a dedicated applicant tracking system for hospitality, retail, high turnover employers, and make the application process simple for the applicant. So I built a product that was something that I needed in my day-to-day to run my business well. And I used my experience in hiring and management to create a quality platform that facilitated the needs of other people like me.
And you said there are maybe other softwares that would accomplish some of these things. How long did you kind of futz around with those, or did you even use them and kind of figure out what was wrong with them?
Yeah, so the idea there is that there are plenty of HR tools for larger corporations, but the idea for what we're offering is that it's part of a bigger platform that not a lot of us as restaurateurs need. So, you know, for instance, my establishment, one of our competitors, to use a product like what we offer is about $350 a month for my small establishment. It's not something that I need. All the bells and whistles they provide is not necessary. So what we offer is a much lower, I mean, we're in like an eighth of the cost to offer the same value, but a more effective platform. I mean, we're actually stealing customers from these large companies, because the large companies are focused on so many, you know, new and exciting things and all this high volume, where they're not providing quality results for their people. So, you know, I spent a lot of time researching competition and their price point and what they do. You know, I played with some platforms and did a little research in everybody. But really, when it comes down to it, the longer we've been doing this, the more competition enters the market. People are understanding what it takes to service these customers. But we're still kind of sitting in a gap right now where, you know, the model that we provide at the price we provide is in a market gap. There's nobody really doing exactly what we're doing. So we're hoping to leverage that and, you know, get some market share and just keep on growing.
So you found this, you know, need that you had for your business, and obviously came up with this great idea for it. What's the, you know, from having this idea for, you know, an app, you know, and then moving it forward, you don't have, you know, software background, right?
No, zero.
So once the idea was like, we really should do this, I really want to kind of get this going, what was your next step?
Well, after kind of swallowing the pain of a failure, I wasn't discouraged by any means, but I wanted to make sure I pulled the trigger on the right concept. I had been saving personally to fund whatever venture I wanted to go into next, so that I didn't have to go out and ask for, you know, the original seed money, or at least I had something to put down for, you know, my next SBA loan. I basically decided that this was the right scalable opportunity. This was my smarter, not harder concept, and started interviewing developers. I went through, asked a few people, you know, their advice, and this is what I'm looking at doing, and what do you think? In one of those meetings, I was introduced to Startup Week, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but it's all over the world. It's a company that basically goes city by city. They create these incredible weekends where entrepreneurs, tech individuals, marketers, attorneys, people who are interested in the startup world in any capacity can show up. You pitch for 60 seconds. The entire room votes on all the pitches. So about 50 or 60 people pitch and 20 get into the weekend. He was telling me about this, and I'm like, that sounds awesome. When is it? He's like, it's in 10 days. Okay, well, I guess I will go home right now. I met him on the roof of a hotel across from where I live downtown. I walked across the street, hopped on my laptop, bought my ticket. They sold out the next day. So it was kind of very awesome timing in a sense. I spent the next week networking with people who have done it, friends that I knew that were in that space. They helped me. They coached me. They helped me put a great 60-second pitch together, and we got in. Ended up just nonstop. I mean, you have 72 hours to build your company and create a pitch to present at the final day. And, I mean, I got a great team, and we worked until about 4 a.m. that first night. We pitched at 5 p.m., built the team, worked till about 4 a.m., got back at 8 a.m., did the exact same thing the entire day. And then on Sunday, just grinded away to get our presentation put together and ended up winning Startup Weekend. So that was kind of our like validation of the concept, and really took us from point A to, you know, L in no time, as far as really deciding that, all right, this is a venture that we're going to start pursuing.
And so the weekend too. So you're kind of building the company essentially at that point, right? You're recruiting people. Are you actually making the product a little bit too? Like, did you have a proof of concept at the end of it, like a beta version? Or
so we had developers that worked pretty much all week that put at least the mockups together. You know, there wasn't a ton of real functionality, but the flow was there to be able to illustrate exactly where we were going and what we were doing. My close friend and business partner, JP and I, we basically got on the phones and we just called every single restaurant we knew and said, hey, if we presented this product to you, would you use it? And we got, I think it was like 40 commits in a matter of a day to basically go in. And we also got a corporate commit saying, hey, we need something like this specifically. We would love to give it a shot. And so we, in our presentation, we're like, listen, not only do we have the concept, the go-to-market plan, but we've sold this. We've already sold it specifically to a group of restaurateurs, bar owners, even grocery stores that need this product and would absolutely use it. So that was, I think, really our big win where, you know, other companies had great ideas, but we had immediate traction.
So, yeah, it sounds like it. The startup weekend, and then on top of it, obviously the hitting the bricks, you know, foot to the pavement, whatever, and walking out and talking to these people to make sure that there is actually a market. You know, you think there's a market for it, of course, and you would buy it and use it, but knowing that these other people are really behind it, and especially getting the pre-commits, that was able to kind of really confirm it for you, right? And that then you've got this idea, you've got these commits. Now you need the actual software, right?
Exactly.
The whole thing.
And that's the hard part, let me tell you. Development is a nightmare, but you know, again, more lessons learned, and we've just been pushing ahead no matter what. So
and as you're learning, you've got the insight of the restaurant business and what the customer wants. I mean, those are super critical points to any application or anything. How much have you tried to learn yourself, not necessarily to program, but you obviously maybe you have, but how much do you think you need to know about all of the software and the languages and the different, back-end infrastructures and all of that in order to make good decisions for the company?
Well, to be honest with you, we took the people that we had met and the network we had built and our resources to kind of guide us through the first steps of it. You know, we're sitting there basically listening to Japanese when they're talking. I had no clue what these guys are talking about the entire weekend. We joked about it. I'm like, you guys, whatever you're talking about sounds great. Just this is what I wanted to do. We were very naive when we got into the startup world, into the tech world. I've learned a lot now. You know, coding, I have not had the time to sit down. Would I love to? Absolutely. But at the same time, I can't be doing everything. And my value really lies in my insight, my knowledge of the product, my knowledge of the customer, my ability to connect them. So, you know, while I could be writing code and I wish that I was, because I'd probably do it 24/7 so that we would expedite this process, it's really not where my value is the highest. So, I mean, we've really looked to the people that we've implemented and brought into the company to fill those gaps and help teach us what we need to know. I can have a pretty good conversation with any developer and understand what's going on and where we're going and what needs to happen. But, you know, I've sat in the room for dev sessions where, you know, I'm on a whiteboard just creating the entire flow and mapping everything out for them. But they've got six screens up. They're jumping around between nine different things. And I couldn't tell you what's going on for a second. So it's, you know, there's definitely a big gap still, but I've dedicated myself to learning, understanding, researching, and really working hand in hand with these people to at least be intelligent and well-versed enough to hold my own in the space.
So, and then, so the, you kind of, it says, you know, founded in 2015, right? And this is when the startup weekend and all of that was going on?
So late 2015.
Late 2015. And you're working, you've got some pre-commits, kind of the big deal, I think, in, you know, your first beta launch or you got your minimum viable product? When does that first kind of really usable thing actually go live?
So we put faith in the wrong person up front, spent a lot of time and energy and resources in someone who told us they would be able to accomplish what we needed, but was not able to deliver. So we wasted probably 6 months with a lead developer that just could not deliver. We went to Chicago in March of 2016 with a layout and really the promise of an MVP within weeks. So we're like, you know what? We're going to go to Chicago. We're going to pre-sell this market. We went door to door. You know, we didn't call. We said, we're just going to pull the trigger on this. Let's see how we do trying to establish at least a foundation in this market. Once we've got customers, then we can, you know, grow organically and really let it take off. We killed it in Chicago. We did amazing. We got commits left and right, but we didn't launch our first like MVP until November of the same year. We lost all those people. None of them signed up with us. So huge lesson learned there. And really it was the fact that we were putting our faith in someone that we didn't spend enough time, I guess vetting is kind of what happened.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard to know, right? Like you said, you know, for all appearances, they're speaking the right language.
Yeah.
So what, you know, you have a little bit of a setback then, what's next?
We just did our research to find a better developer that we could bring into the company that would work, you know, hand in hand with us, understanding our goals and our direction. We built a better team, and while it's been slower than we want, it's kind of limited by our resources still, but we are working on that funding round, which is actually right before we got on this call. I was, you know, finalizing some content that one of our angel groups has requested from us. So really the idea was just basically, you know, no big deal, you know, another lesson learned. We know this idea will take off. We're going to keep at it. So we hired the right team and have been working ever since. We ended up launching our MVP in January of 2017, really didn't start onboarding clients until closer to March. And we basically used 2017 to learn a lot of lessons, learn how to onboard, how to network with these people, how to, you know, increase retention. We learned the fact that the way that the platform was built, the back-end databasing, wasn't returning information fast enough. Our user experience was too slow. So we took 3 months off in 2017 and went back to the drawing board to tune up the platform and the functionality. And now, I mean, we're ready. We've got an incredible, you know, first tier built out. Our user experience is awesome. The flow is great. Our mobile is 100% fluid and really impressive. Yeah, I mean, it's just like everything else I've talked about. It's lessons learned and, you know, I bet I could have asked someone to help me pick the right people, but you know, I thought I was making the right decisions at the time. So just another lesson learned.
Yeah. So this, man, I'm trying with my background in kind of application design, I'm trying not to geek out over the platform and all of the nitty gritty of that, but I'm just thinking through it. I've kind of, it's interesting, you know, kind of, as you deal with the clients, you know, you get this feedback. It's not the feedback you wanted to hear, maybe that this and that was slow and not getting it, but you're making corrections towards that. How do you deal with they were the current paying clients at that time, right? To kind of just keep them on while you're trying to kind of make the improvements and work with them for that. What's the incentive, you know, how have you helped incentivize them to kind of work with you and kind of keep it going?
Yeah.
Because it seems like a product they want, but they want it to obviously, you know, work as well for them as possible.
Yeah. So for the most part, I mean, it wasn't to the point where it was so bad that it was not functional. It was still doing what it needed to do. There was just a lot of room for improvement. So if there were customers that were really struggling, we definitely offered free months. We offered, you know, some free print collateral for them. We incentivized them in ways to, you know, kind of ease the pain a little bit and buy us time. But for the most part, I mean, we really just kind of left it where it was at for a little bit because we've got multiple environments. So we've got a production environment where everything's completely live and out for the world to use. but we've got duplicates of the site where our developers are tuning up, building, testing. And we just got, you know, different dev URLs that we function out of to kind of put these things into place and make sure that they work well in real life. So, consistently working in behind the scenes while the product is still live, and then, you know, launching upgrades and new releases as consistently as possible to tune up and make the experience better, as we can. But until we were comfortable, we kind of stopped selling. There's no point in bringing a new customer on if we're just going to have to apologize for our inability to accommodate their needs. So we took a step back, took a deep breath, worked hard to get things right, and then re-released.
Nice. Yeah, and I think it is. It's about building that foundation that you're comfortable with and, you know, performing as well as you want it to. People are willing to forgive some things as long as their critical core features work, you know, the outskirts of the app they're willing to be a little forgiving for. So when the customers kind of come to you though and ask for things, what's the process for, obviously you want to listen to the customer as much as possible, but maybe it conflicts with an ideal or a plan that you already have for the app. How do you kind of balance the two of the customer versus kind of the direction that you see as really being the future of the software?
Yeah. So it's kind of the same thing with like the restaurant. You know, there's a lot of restaurants that have identity crisis. You know, they want to be something and then they get an idea or they see a trend and they want to do this and they want to do that. And then your customer doesn't know what you are. They don't know what to expect when they visit you. So it's the same thing with this is, you know, there are plenty of opportunities for us to develop features that could accommodate this customer, but not that. But we really have to look at the true value and the meat of our product, and understand, you know, that small feature is not necessarily going to be a huge win. There's no return on the investment for the time spent. You know, we've accommodated 1% of our target market when, you know, if it's something that everybody can use and there's real value in it, that's when we dedicate time and releasing it. It's really just trying to stay focused, like we talked about earlier, trying not to get distracted by the shiny things that are, you know, over in the corner when you've got something really valuable right in front of you that you still need to finish up. So, we get great ideas from our customers. We get, you know, awesome insight and feedback, and they tell us sometimes it's like, you know what, I don't know why we didn't think of that. We're going to pull the trigger ASAP. Sometimes it's like, okay, well, we'll put that on the list of the 150 things we still plan to release over the next 18 months. So we'll let you know when it gets there. It's just kind of a, you know, where are the biggest wins for the least amount of investment? You know, the biggest return on your investment should be the goal. And so you really try to accomplish the most with the least overhead and resources spent, until, you know, you've already learned your lessons, you're a successful company, and you can spend the money to do whatever you want.
Yeah. So with the lessons you've learned so far in all of your different endeavors, and as you kind of move forward into the future, how are you going to apply these lessons? Where are you going to kind of go next?
Well,
or, you know, with the restaurant or whatever, the apps and the staffed up. And
yeah. So, I mean, the restaurant, we're continually growing. We've got a few other opportunities in front of us, but we're going to be patient. We're going to make sure we make the right decisions at the right time and don't overextend ourselves. So, and that's the other thing is, you know, we've been smart with our finances. We don't want to go out and leverage everything we've got to jump at an opportunity. So, we're being patient there. As far as the app goes, I mean, it's my full-time gig. I'm taking a big step back from the restaurant. I'm only there a couple of days a week for, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day. And then I'm full-time on this, and it's the goal is to, finish out the product completely. Start, you know, getting a U.S. market share that's respectable. And then we want to go global. There's an opportunity in a ton of different countries that have the same problems. And this particular service at this price point, is definitely something that can expand, internationally. So this is really my, you know, we talk about exit strategy. This concept is where I want to set myself up. I want to be able to do this to smarter, not harder, work from anywhere. And eventually, you know, either have a company that's, you know, something that's a giant or sell a company, to the Giant. So it's, it really depends on our plan of action for the next few years and how fast we get traction. But Staffed Up is definitely in the near future, if for as far as I can see out, my dedicated project. And then, you know, who knows? I'm 34. I've got plenty of time to make some new decisions. So
see what the next bright and shiny is. Yeah, I think that's awesome. So if people want to learn more about you, any of your businesses, where should they go? What should they do?
I mean, I'm Billy Giordano on Facebook. Super easy to find. Billy@staffedup.com email. I network with everyone and everything. Pretty much anyone that wants to have a meeting with me, I take it, because you never know who you're talking to or what opportunity they might present. Even if it's a good idea that's completely irrelevant to your business, I've learned that, you know, I get more from conversations like this and just, you know, talking to people from all walks of life or business than anything. So, happy to communicate, network with, and, you know, interact with just about anybody. So, email's great. Facebook, more welcome to find me. My restaurants, room-38.com, staffedup.com, pretty easy to find.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being here, Billy. And we'll kind of kick this out. And anybody who's listening out there, if they want to, you know, share and like and tweet and send this off to their friends, that would be great. We appreciate the exposure. Yeah, like I said, thanks again, Bill.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. It's good talking to you.